All practitioners of yoga use mantras. Some of them know what they stand for or what they are there for. Some of them insist that you should know the meaning and meditate upon the meaning. Others insist just the contrary. They say the less you know about the meaning, the better. Because according to them, we shall dispose of this first. According to them, it is not the meaning that your mind attributes to the mantra that matters, but the mantra itself. In other words, I am not called upon to know what electricity is and how it functions. It will do if I know that all I have to do is to press the switch and the light comes on. I don't know what electricity is. I don't know how it functions, nothing at all. And I should also know that if there is a live wire, I must be careful. Don't seem to be right. What does the word mantra mean? However, first question, mantra, what does it mean? Mananat trayate iti mantra. A mantra is something which protects one, saves one, redeems one by manana. Now again, there is a question, there is a puzzle, as in X quantity. What does manana mean? From mantra we have come to another puzzling statement, manana. We were trying to examine what mantra means, and now we have only jumped from the frying pan to the fire. What does manana mean now? Manana is a sort of mental activity which is not thought. It has been rather cleverly translated into English, reflection. I like the translation. I don't know whether the Sanskrit scholars will agree that it's a good enough translation, but it is a very clever translation. If you stand in front of a mirror, there is a reflection. Can I say that the reflection is the activity of the mirror? Yes, I have to, no? Isn't the mirror reflecting the image? Naturally. So, is it doing something? Is the mirror doing something? No. Yes? No.
Yes.
No. Please make up your mind. Is the mirror doing something? That is manana. When you place this sound symbol in front of the mind, when the mind faces this mantra, when the mind faces the mantra is reflected in the mind. It is then there is reflection. And by being thus reflected, the mantra is able to redeem us. There seems to be a lot more in it than meets the eye. Because even Patanjali Maharshi, the author of the Yoga Sutras, insists upon tat japas tadartha bhavanam. He wants every student of yoga, every student of meditation, to use the mystic syllable Om, the mystic syllable Om, and tat japas tadartha bhavanam. Repeat it mentally, at the same time reflecting upon the meaning. Let your mind reflect the meaning. Now, in order to reflect, what is essential? If you want the mirror to reflect your beautiful face, what would you ensure? First of all, you would ensure that the mirror is clean. If it is not clean, you may blame yourself. You may have a most beautiful face, but if the mirror is not clean, you will find that your face is not clean. So you would first want to clean the mirror. And then what do you want to do? You want the mirror to be passive and steady. If the mirror is not steady, your face is not clear, distorted. It becomes distorted. So, in order to ensure that the mantra is properly reflected in the mind has to be made steady. But, assert these yogis, the proper reflection of the mantra itself steadies the mind, which is true. Which is true. For instance, I want to repeat a mantra. I want to reflect upon a mantra. I take Om. By looking steadily at the mantra itself, my mind becomes steady. It is as it were, the mirror is able to look at your face. There is this vital difference in between the mirror analogy and the mantra analogy. In the case of the mirror, you look into the mirror. The mirror is passive. The mirror does nothing. But when you reflect upon the mantra, you are the active agent. And so you look within, look at the mantra, look at what goes on inside you, and the mind seems to come to a beautiful standstill. It is not vacant, it's not blank, it's not a void. The mind at that stage is not a void, is not a blank, but it reflects the mantra, and therefore it becomes the mantra. The mind becomes the mantra. This is what the yogis want. When your mind becomes Om, then it becomes divine. All the impurities, all the rubbish that has been accumulated there is washed out. all the accumulated dirt is washed out. And therefore, even our master used to insist that japa, that is the repetition of a mantra, and also kirtan, singing the mantra, is an integral sadhana in itself, is an integral yoga in itself. I must explain this. The orthodox yogis had their own theory. You were asking about this thing 2 days ago. The orthodox yogis had their own theory that we seekers have three distinct problems to contend. One, they call mala. Mala means impurity, dirt. Second, vikshepa, or wandering, mind wandering. And the third, avarana, the veil. Now, the orthodox yogis were very clear-cut in their exposition of the problem and the solution. They said, in order to overcome the first problem, dirt, which manifests itself in our life as selfishness, as greed, as lust, as anger, etc., etc., all the evil qualities, one must practice what they called karma yoga. Unselfishly serve humanity and try to overcome lust, anger, greed, etc., etc. This can be done only by serving others, serving the guru, serving your parents, serving society, and so on. By karma yoga, this dirt or the impurity is removed. And then comes, they had a sort of treble decker, four story building. In their mind, it was quite clear. I don't know, very often it's not quite clear to us whether these three story, four story building can be constructed one by one after the other. They said, first remove all these impurities. Before you remove these impurities, you may have to take another 10 or 15 births. Because you try to curb anger, you try to curb greed, and you try to curb lust. And in the meantime, vanity is growing. You understand? He says, you know, I don't get angry at all. I'm always peaceful. I'm always laughing. That means he's becoming more and more vain. Then somebody comes and says, no, you are full of vanity, that vanity must go. Oh, all right, he tries to reduce the vanity, and something else comes up. So, before he can completely rid himself of this mala or impurity, he might have passed away four times. Anyhow, that's their belief. After one has got rid of this mala or impurity, one goes on to what is called bhakti yoga in order to steady the mind. Bhakti yoga is love of God, where we do all sorts of wonderful practices, sit and sing God's names, do worship, and so on, by which the mind is steadied. Also Raja Yogic practices, dhyana. And then they wanted that the student should go to a guru and get his instruction for enlightenment or the removal of the veil of ignorance. Our master used to say that this simple repetition of a mantra does all the three jobs. The simple repetition of a mantra does all three together at the same time. This can only be done at the same time. It is not as though one can start removing the impurities in the mind and then wait for some time. It can't be done. It can't be done. If the impurities are gone, at the same time the veil is gone. It's only the impurities that make the mind wandering, restless. So if the impurities go, the mind becomes steady and the veil is gone. So our master was very fond of this mantra, the japa, repetition of a mantra. There are innumerable mantras. Innumerable mantras. I believe some are even inventing new mantras. Why not? There is no harm in me inventing a mantra, I suppose, except that it may not have the same psychic benefit. A new word coined by Time magazine may not evoke the same sentiment in your heart as the old word does. Will it? Let's say I have decided to use some funny word. The ground. Let's say the ground. Instead of God. I don't want this God. I am explaining to you quite sensibly, logically, that God is the ground of the entire being. So I am going to say that use the word ground instead of God. Do you think it will appeal to you, to your emotion, to your sentiment, to your heart? How does your heart feel if I say, let us all go and bow down to the ground? It may not have the same appeal. That's what I mean. If someone says bow to God, there is an emotional appeal there. Why is it so? What exactly is the difference between ground and God? The word God has been associated with a certain psychological or spiritual quantity, factor, for thousands and thousands of years. So the weight of the thought force, the spiritual force of all these millions of people using this word with a particular connotation is there behind this word. And you and I are able to make use of it. Just as I told you, the electric switch. I didn't invent electricity. I don't know how it works. Thousands and thousands of people have even died, perhaps, making the switch and making this current and the light work. By merely meddling with this switch, I am making use of the struggles and the sacrifices of those millions of people. In the same way, by using this mantra, which has been brought down, handed down by tradition, whether we believe in this tradition or not, we are benefited. We are benefited. Is it automatic? To a great extent, it is automatic. To a great extent, it is automatic. But that far and no further. Some of the mantras can bestow their benefits upon you even if you knew nothing about them. Nothing at all. Exactly in the same way as electricity will confer its benefit upon you whether you know the meaning or not. But the mantra has a lot more to give you than what a blind repetition of the mantra is capable of bestowing upon you. That is the point. We do not say that blind repetition is of use, no use at all. It's of some use. But it is a great pity if the higher spiritual values of the mantra are lost by default. What are those higher spiritual benefits that one may derive? The mantra will enable us to come face to face with something wonderful, something which modern science has very nearly proved. Have you seen what is called the sound of music?
Yes.
Quite a number of these, I don't know. Where is it? Where did we go the other day?
Huh?
Hollywood Boulevard. Somewhere, some shop also we saw. And this I have seen in quite a number of places in Montreal and so on. The sound of music. When, what do they do? They play a record or something. Have you seen, sir? What do you mean? You haven't seen?
The movie.
Huh?
The movie?
No, man. No.
No, I forget the name, what they call it. Synchronized lights to sound.
They play a sort of record, and then the lights keep flashing, blah, 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 blah. Various patterns of...
Psychedelic.
Light show.
Huh?
Light show.
Lovely. I thought it was the sound of music. The light of music.
There's a special name for synchronizing lights with the music.
Yeah.
Huh?
Pardon, sir?
Stroboscopic light.
No,
that's not it. The idea is, the sound is transformed into, the sound waves are transformed into light waves. That's the idea. So, they are playing some music somewhere, but you are seeing it as light. That's all I'm interested in. That's good enough for me. They are playing some music. I don't know what the music they are playing. But I sit there and look. I can see the play of colors. And I see some patterns in front of me. Yogis believe that each mantra, in exactly a similar way, is able to create a form, a pattern. So that by continually repeating the mantra, your whole inner psychic personality is completely transmuted. I hate the word transformed. Your whole psychic personality is transmuted into something divine. And this is possible. This is one of the lower possibilities. There's still something more interesting. But if you don't want these fringe benefits, some of the mantras can give you a good health, some of the mantras can cure you from a headache, some of the mantras can give you money if you want, some of the mantras can do all sorts of things. Sometimes these things are good, sometimes these things are not so good. I remember one wonderful lady in India. She was the wife of a very high railway official. They didn't have children for a long time, 10 or 15 years after they got married, and so they were getting worried. The woman especially, because the mother-in-law was threatening that if she didn't bear children anymore, the husband would have to divorce her and get married again. So that was a great problem. She had gone from pillar to post, to all sorts of places of pilgrimage and doctors and witchcraft, all sorts of things. Everything she had tried. And eventually she came to her master. But in the meantime she was very devoted to her master. She used to come every year, spend 2 or 3 months in the summer vacation in the ashram, etc., etc. And she used to send us some mangoes. every year 2 or 3 baskets of mangoes. Then, after doing all this, eventually she came to our master and said, "This is the problem. I haven't told you all these years because I thought it was too silly for me to approach you for your blessing that I may have a baby. But this is the problem. Our marriage stands on the rocks. Please help us." And our master said, "Oh, is that all? Repeat this mantra, you'll have a baby." He gave her a mantra. "Hey, repeat this mantra, you'll have a baby." He made it look so simple, and it proved to be so simple. After all these fortune tellers and astrologers, and everybody had said, "No, it's not possible." And defying all those, this little mantra had performed the little miracle. But you know what a wonderful miracle it was? The child was born, and of course, there was complication because she was fairly almost near middle ages, so there was complication. Trouble before birth, trouble after, during birth, trouble after birth. The child was sick, and the mother was sick, and the mother was sick, and the child was sick, and the child was sick, and the mother was sick. This was going on constantly, some trouble or other. And the baby starts growing up. They have to look after it extremely carefully now, because you see, it was born after 15 years of endless penance. With the result that she completely forgot the master, the ashram, all good things in life. I doubt very much whether he even thought of God, except when the child was sick and she was sick. So, the mantra can bestow worldly objects also upon us, but then, that's a danger. If I am going to be lured into worldly pursuits, because the mantra gives them very quickly, then I am lost. I am losing the real benefit of the mantra. If on the other hand, I don't let my mind run along those grooves, but dive deep within myself and let the mantra be reflected in the mind, I would like you to do it at the end of this session now. Repeat any mantra you like. Any mantra you like. And as the mind repeats the mantra, it's a miracle. Can you watch what goes on within you? How is it possible for a sound to be heard within? How is it possible for the sound of the mantra to be heard within? I don't know if the question is clear to you. A sound can only be produced by something striking something. Even that comes from the wind striking the throat, the vocal cords or the windpipe. Without any of these things, how is it possible for a sound to be produced within? This is the first question. And yet, I can hear the mantra distinctly. Then, question number two. I hear the mantra, but that's what I think. Now, in which case, when I say I hear the mantra, a little more analytically, I tend to say my mind hears the mantra. Who repeats the mantra? My mind repeats the mantra. My mind repeats the mantra, my mind hears the mantra. What is this? Is the mind one or two? It's here that you will enter into deep meditation. If you follow this carefully, you will enter into deep meditation. The mind produces the sound and the mind hears the sound. The mind repeats the mantra, the mind listens to the mantra. What a beautiful thing it is. There is no need for an I there at all, for an ego there at all, for a self there at all. It is not as though I repeat the mantra and I listen to the mantra. The mantra is being repeated, it is being heard. Put it in passive voice and you understand the magic. The mantra is repeated, it happens here. And the mantra is heard, that it happens there. The I has no place in this game at all. The wind blows, the leaves move. Yes? The wind blows, the leaves move. If you pursue this inquiry carefully, then the ego just disappears. Probably it has never been there. Probably it has ever been just a shadow. This is probably the greatest benefit of the mantra. Whereas it also has the lesser benefits, like bestowing good health upon us or saving us from troubles, giving us wealth, money, promotion, examination, success in examinations, and so on. All these are possible, all these are valid, but the greatest benefit of a mantra is to bring about this state of inner awareness. This inner awareness in which things just happen. In the awareness, the mantra just happens. When you look within, you hear the mantra. You hear the mantra and you see the mantra being repeated. The repeater and the hearer are both the same. Consciousness, awareness, intelligence, understanding, whatever you call it. When you come face to face with this, then you are saved. You are able to see yourself. And when you see yourself, it is no longer yourself in the sense of a narrow little thing, but the indwelling omnipresence. Now, for the next 10 or 15 minutes, we shall try just this. Use any mantra you like. If you don't have a mantra, use Om. Om when you inhale, Om when you exhale. Try merely listening to it. Listen to the breath, and as you listen to the breath, you are listening to this Om within you. Intruding thoughts, but keep listening to your mantra.